Conscious leadership is like being the captain of a ship. Just as a captain is responsible for navigating the vessel towards its destination, a mindful leader is responsible for steering the organization towards its goals while considering the greater good. To be a conscious leader means to be aware of the impact of one's actions, decisions, and behaviors on the people and the planet. It means leading with empathy, compassion, and a sense of purpose. It means embracing diversity and inclusion and creating a culture of transparency and accountability. But why do we need to have conscious conversations? Just as a ship cannot reach the destination without the captain communicating with the crew and making informed decisions based on the conditions and circumstances, an organization cannot thrive without leaders having open and honest conversations with their employees, customers, and stakeholders. Conscious conversations are meaningful because they allow us to understand each other's perspectives, build trust, and collaborate towards a common goal. They enable us to identify the issues that matter most and find ways to address them constructively and meaningfully. In today's world, where social, environmental, and economic challenges are becoming increasingly complex and interconnected, we need conscious leadership and conscious conversations more than ever. We need leaders who are willing to take a stand for what is right, committed to creating positive change, and can inspire and empower others to do the same. So delve into the world of conscious leadership and explore the power of conscious conversations. We'll hear from experts, thought leaders, and change makers making a difference in their organization and communities. We'll learn about the challenges, the strategies, and lessons they have learned along the way. Together, we can create a world where conscious leadership and conversations are the norms, where businesses and organizations are driven by a sense of purpose and a commitment to making a positive impact. So let's sail on this journey of discovery and let's navigate towards a better future for all. I want you to tell me a little bit about yourself. What is the things that keep you up at night and as a CEO? And tell us about your journeys.
Thank you. I'm the managing director of Weber Shandwick's Africa Operations based out of Johannesburg, with a presence in three key countries and a partner network across 35 other countries. What keeps me up at night? Shoo. I mean, besides my 7-year-old who does not like bedtime, it is probably, collaborating with the industry to figure out how to underscore our value to our clients in a really meaningful way. How do you change the way our discipline is positioned within our clients' businesses?
Love that.
Yeah.
And I have an advisory company called Inzalo Communications, Inzalo Consulting. And what we do is consult clients across the globe and across Africa around their needs in terms of risk and reputation management. And what keeps me up at night is providing our clients with the right solution and how we should be dealing with what is required for them to actually achieve their business goals and objectives. Mm. I think that is probably, it's that 2 o'clock wake up in the morning. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity.
Mm. But you forgot to mention one thing. You are the goat of the PR industry. I mean, your career spans. You are PR. So she forgot to mention that part. Sorry, I had to do it for you.
Well, Karina could have.
With pleasure. Thanks, Carmen. I'm the CEO of Edelman Africa. Edelman is a large communications consultancy globally, headquartered in the US. I've been looking after the team for the last 3 years now, in our offices in Johannesburg and in Nairobi, and across the rest of the continent where we work with, agency partner networks as well. So, I think keeping me up at night, many things, but I think probably the biggest one is the volatility that we're seeing in the world. And how we adapt to that, as our role as communications professionals, particularly in light of what we see coming down the line. So AI is top of mind for me in terms of how the industry will change. And are we going to be ready for that? Are we going to be left behind? How are we going to get ourselves to remain relevant and sustainable into the future? So sleepless nights, but wouldn't be doing anything else.
Wow. Thank you so much. Well, since your blood is blue, we are also coming here with blue blood because the color of trust is blue. And we're going to unpack that today. So before we even get started, we believe in God we trust, the rest must bring data. So we can't have a proper conversation if we're not going to bring the data to the floor. And I think we must start with the Africa PR report and see what is happening with an African landscape. Because I think what's really important for the status update is to really look at it from our lens as Africans. And then also look at what is the state of trust. I'm looking at the trust barometer from Edelman's a report. So, and just see what is happening, and then let's take the conversation from there. All right, Bridget, what is on your horizon?
Well, ICO do the, it's a global world report, and within it is an Africa report. And when you talk about data, probably top insight for Africa is the fact that artificial intelligence is being embraced in Africa, and I think it's being recognized. The skills are being our top focus for African PR consultants and PR practitioners. And if we compare that against the world, it compares favorably because PR professionals across the world are emphasizing the fact that skills within the AI environment are a critical skill. Mm. And the second one is around the second insight that we can come across is the fact that measurement and evaluation is very important. And we're using data analytics for measurement and analytics and looking at reports, success of campaigns, and using that data to inform strategies. And again, that compares favorably across the globe. Mm. So it's key. Data is key in our industry. Africa is not backwards. Africa compares across the world. From a technology point of view, innovation, and from an expertise point of view. Then, of course, there's also talent. Talent remains an issue, and it comes out strongly in that report. Maintaining mid to senior level talent in agencies is a problem. And one of the growth areas that we see in Africa is sustainability. Sustainability not using the word ESG, that although it does use ESG, but sustainability from a community point of view, a people point of view, and from an environmental point of view. So probably those are the highlights. And again, from a sustainability point of view, also equally as important if you compare it with the globe.
Mm.
So South Africa and the rest of the continent is very on a level with global standards and global trends.
Thank you for that. Karina?
Great. Thank you. Well, the Edelman Trust Barometer studies the levels of trust in society across four main institutions, being business, government, NGOs, and the media. We've been studying it now for 25 years. So we've managed over this quarter of a century to really pick up some interesting data and insights mapped really against what's going on in our macro environment. Mm-hmm. I think what's really interesting in listening to your sort of top insights that have come out of your report to map it against that, I think what's most interesting is what we saw last year, which is really around this idea of innovation. Mm-hmm. So if we think about AI as a kind of subset within innovation, and how that relates to trust, there's obviously many trust aspects around the ethics and security issues, et cetera, related to artificial intelligence. And I think as an industry, we're at that, almost at that tipping point where we've got to start figuring this out very quickly, because it's really catching up with us. And I think if we don't take what our study showed us last year was if we don't take people on the journey and we don't allow them to build trust in AI as an innovation, for example, we're never going to get there. And we're never going to get the adoption that we need to really continue to be progressive and continue to stay, in touch with the rest of the world. So I think that's a big thing to note. From a contextual perspective, to give you a sense of, I think, how people are feeling generally around the world based on our data, it's really, unfortunately, not a great picture. People are feeling what we're calling this year is sort of a crisis of grievance. Mm. There's a series of institutional failures that people are feeling, let down by your what's considered sort of traditional leaders in society, business and government, and even the media, kind of relating it back to the PR space, just the low levels of trust in media. We just don't know what to believe. Misinformation, disinformation is an all-time high. And it's just, we're just lacking leadership. That's what people are telling us in this report. And I think that's going to have a knock-on impact as well in terms of how we think about our roles as communicators, and who we put out there to be able to, you know, speak to society. Are those individuals trusted? How do we build trust in them? How do we believe what they tell us? Because we're not sure. People are not feeling like they know where to turn to get the information they need. So, not a great picture. But I think it's just everything that's going on in the world is leaving people a little bit anxious about the way forward. And it would have a knock-on effect, I'm sure, in our own industry as well.
Wow. Larry, what do you have for us?
So we've just launched a paper, which is part of our C-suite consulting offering called Web Advisory. And we surveyed 200 C-suite leaders across the world to get a sense of how they feel about doing business, about the risks in and around doing business, given the current geopolitical dynamics especially. And 78% of these 200 leaders we spoke to are really optimistic about the potential for growth in and around their businesses, which is an interesting sort of dynamic to the low levels of trust that are there, especially with traditional leaders like Karen is saying. And I think it's largely because, and I think this is from your report as well, it's largely because there's an increased trust in business because of the decreased trust in government. You know, and so you're seeing that business is really taking that to heart and figuring out a means to take advantage of this opportunity. But interestingly, only 17% of these leaders feel like their communications teams are ready to help them navigate the space. And so the challenge for us as an industry is how do we meet the moment in a meaningful way? And I think it's always the challenge for us as an industry. But I think right now, especially when business is front and center in terms of giving people a lot more hope to towards a better world, towards a different reality, the place and space that communications takes in the boardroom becomes even more important.
Yeah. Wow. As you're all talking, the thing that's coming to mind is the dead horse theory, right? So the dead horse theory is this concept of when the horse is dead, get off the horse, right? But what really happens is we get a new whip. We whip it into place and we say, okay, right, let me see if this horse will wake up. And we do all of these crazy things. And we say, okay, let's get a committee of people that can actually come and see why this horse is not moving, why this horse is dead. We go around the world to go get innovations to see how they are rejuvenating and reviving their dead horse. And then we come to the conclusion after all of these methodologies that we have a problem, the horse is dead. And this reminds me of something that we are seeing here, because the common denominator here is trust, right? We are in the post-truth era, whether we like to accept it or not. And putting jingles together, those crazy concepts, or let's just create an authentic brand and let's do all of the tactics that we can use to make a brand or a business or a thought leader resonate with people is no longer going to fly. Now it's rolling up the sleeves and say, okay, right, we have to change as leaders. We need to change as thought leaders, but also the way that we do business. The whole ecosystem has to change. You can't just look at it from one perspective. It's like a systems thinking approach to it. And that's what I'm gathering from it. But Bridget, you touch on something very interesting about, you know, the younger generation and not seeing enough younger generation coming into the pipeline for PR. I did a research study for UJ a few years ago, and we started seeing just by how people are searching and applying for various academic applications, we saw that PR was 21st. In the search, and not a typical search for South African youth. And that to me was very stressful to watch. And also marketing. I think marketing was 20th. And the other day I was asked by
a young leader, and she said to me, Carmen, I want to ask your opinion. Is there still room for us to come into this industry? How is AI going to take over our jobs? What is your view?
So, Carmen, I want to just go back a step. I think I just want to talk to Larry's comment that he made in his research. I think that public relations professionals have to move beyond the press release. And we have to educate people out there that public relations is not the press release. Yeah. So the fact that your research shows that high percentage of people that want to move forward, it is a great opportunity for us to push that narrative beyond the press release.
Absolutely.
And, you know, on my gravestone, one day they're going to say, Bridget, beyond the press release. So before you get to that goat.
This is the goat, right?
Also sounds like the best tagline for Inzala Communications.
But what I do want to say about that is I think that there are a lot of people that are interested and coming into the industry. There are not enough opportunities for young people coming into the industry because agencies and corporates are looking for experienced. And that's when we talk about retention at that medium and senior level. It's because there's a huge movement of people within corporate and agency environment. Everybody's stealing one another. They're using that as an opportunity to steal the skills, if you like, and bring them into corporate or into agencies at advanced salaries and advanced opportunities. But it certainly is impacting on the youngsters that are coming into the world and coming into the industry. I had a conversation just the other day with the UJ people on this very subject, and they say that we are not providing as agencies enough opportunities because they have to do an internship to come into agencies and into corporate life. Mm-hmm. There aren't those opportunities. And I think that is where we've got an issue, but there are a lot of people out there. There are an enormous amount of junior practitioners that are available, and we can pick and choose.
And for the future, and for the future generations and the generations to come in.
So for the future generations, I would be encouraging them to encourage agencies to take on the young professional. Mm. But they also need to show enthusiasm. They need to show willingness. They need to show eagerness to actually learn and to be taught and to learn new skills. It's not just about social media and being that influencer.
No,
look where I am.
And maybe just to take a step back as well, I think how we're training PR professionals has to change. Mm. So the curriculum needs to look completely different.
I agree.
Otherwise, they're coming in with outdated skills already into a wave that we who are working have been able to grow with and learn and learn to be accustomed to working with. So even things like critical thinking, you know, that's a softer skill, but it's got to be taught and learnt, because as you say, with AI, and we think about automation of sometimes very rudimentary tasks, sometimes considered more administrative tasks that maybe your more junior people coming in would be threatened by, because they're thinking, well, then what am I going to do? How do I learn? Mm. So mentorship is going to become critical for senior leaders, making sure the transfer of skills and the thinking is there. So I think even a step before that is going to be the training has to look completely different.
Mm. Yeah, definitely.
I also wonder just how ready are our agencies for young talent when it comes in. I think the generational difference is very, very, very clear, especially when you are hiring Gen Zs and they're coming into a corporate environment. And for all intents and purposes, we are corporate. How they find themselves in that space and how they feel welcomed, how there's a sense of belonging within that space. I think from a culture perspective, agencies do need to make the shift so that a lot of these young talented individuals, whether they studied PR or not, because I think the pool for our practitioners is so much bigger and broader than marketing and communications graduates. Some of my best people studied economics. Mm. They studied politics, you know. And so how we shift our own cultures so that we are ready to receive these young entrepreneurs who have a great future within this industry. I think it's important.
Yeah. You know, and as you were talking about this, Larry, something that's very interesting to me, you remember that viral thing that went around where you had to give the brief to the Gen Z to do the ad, and it was going viral. Mm-hmm. You know, we as Africans sit with a very high percentage of youth, and PR and communications is going to look very different when you have that kind of market and growing up with that market and having the voice that resonates with that market. What is your views on that?
I'll start. I think Africa is a very exciting continent. I mean, all 54 countries, sometimes 55, depending on what's happening up north. But I think we're a very, very exciting space culturally. And a lot of that excitement is in the fact that we really don't have too many references for how things are done or how things should be done. And within that space, and it's largely because we're much younger democracies, right? Most of our democracies are less than 100 years. And so when there's problems in front of us, if we disabuse ourselves of sort of Western approaches to approach problems, we open up so much room for creativity and for a different way of approaching things. I remember seeing that brief. I think I saw it on LinkedIn. And I remember thinking it would be so interesting to see how someone who doesn't know what a PR agency should operate like, what the operations within an ad agency would be like, how they would tackle something like this, and the kinds of creative solutions that would come out of it if they're unencumbered by sort of this legacy way of working. So I think that, again, we have the challenge and also the opportunity as an industry to make it so different ways of approaching problems have space and room within our agencies. Because when we make room for that, we level up creativity, we level up our ability to consult better to clients, and we really improve our service offering in a meaningful way. And that 17% number of business leaders who don't feel like communications is supporting them enough will start to change, because what we'll start to see is creative solutions to business problems that are using communications as a solve differently. And I think our youth dividend on the continent, being the largest youth dividend in the world, is really an opportunity more than anything.
Absolutely.
It is, how do we make it so young people feel comfortable enough to come into our space and disrupt things and bring in a new way of thinking and challenge the way things have always been, so that we can move to that next frontier.
Yeah. And I just want to add to that, something within conscious leaders that we really take seriously is to break that generational gatekeeping that is happening. Like, there is something so cool about bringing younger generations in the older generations and say, okay, right, let's build this bridge between all of us, and you've got something, I've got something, let's mash it up and see what can come out of that. But it takes a lot of trust, which we need, and a lot of hard work and effort to achieve that. But it is something for the audience to think about. Bridget, I would love to hear your views.
Well, I think that I want to just say, following on Larry's comment, I think that's what we as PR professionals should be doing. We are about disrupting.
Yeah.
Yes.
I go back to beyond the press release. Because we should be disrupting. Yeah, and if, depending on your client, depending on their target audience, we should be having people in the room and working on that business that represent the client's target audience. And yes, you can marry the experience, and but you need to also bring in the people that have the street creds, that have that passion, that have that innovation, that have that different thinking. And they should be allowed to do that. And surely within the PR environment, we should be doing that. And I think, I know we had a client just recently that we worked on, and it was just, we need your experience because you're going to guide us and you're going to give us that advisory. But bring in the youngsters that are going to give us that energy and those insights. And that's what we deliver to our clients. You know, I think that's what we should be doing anyway.
I love that. So, Karina, I mean, like, I'm, you know, listening to the conversation around trust, trust is the currency of the 21st century. We just can't do without it. And this is how we're going to shape the future, build a fortified future, and together can pioneer and build a future that we want and not end up with a future we don't want. But it has to build on this fundamental trust. And it feels like it's fragile. It feels... that we are in a huge predicament. From my perspective, from an ethnography and looking at the pulses and the behaviors that are happening online, there is definitely a massive shift that happened since 2022, towards how, and especially when AI and ChatGPT came on to the forefront, is how citizens do research on companies. So if you are in the news, for a good thing or a bad thing, they are, let me go and check up on this company. And AI, ChatGPT might not necessarily have, or Perplexity, whichever tool you're using, might not have the right answers, and then use that as a source of truth. And the critical thinking that also needs to come to the forefront. It is scary, but it is also very empowering for everyday people to start making decisions whether they can trust a business. What is your take on that, especially with this balance between trust and artificial intelligence?
Well, I think we saw this year in our report, I mean, we've been measuring it every year, just the different media sources for people and where people are actually looking to get their information from. And what we see that by a country mile, the most popular is search engine. And that actually shifted. We saw that shift happen in COVID, because I think people at that point, that was where we saw this, COVID came just after sort of the whole fake news, what should we call that? Also a bit of a pandemic, I guess. It hasn't left us. But then we went into COVID, and I think at that point people weren't sure who to believe, because at that point there was so much information coming at us, and this was about our lives and our livelihoods. So we started to see that shift away from traditional news sources as where people were getting their information from. So now they are going into search. And we have a responsibility to make sure that what they're finding, what generates for them, is accurate information and fact-based information. Because more and more we've seen, and as we see the media really shift away from traditional sources and go online, they've had to find new ways to commercialize themselves, you know, so that's what's driving clicks. And if you go onto YouTube, and I watch the news via YouTube these days, I don't sit and watch a news channel. I pick and choose what news I want to be able to see. I fall for it every time with the descriptor under the little thumbnail of a picture of what's in that story. So you've got to check the sources. You've got to check all of those things. So I think we know this is how people are getting their information. So we've got to be 1,000% sure that if we are custodians of that, that we are very careful with it. But we also have a duty and responsibility when we work with the media and any other, and we've seen this moved also from companies being more published based in their communication. So less press release, more you come and get it from us if you need it on their website. So this is where people, I think, are finding their information. Linked to that, though, to your earlier point around how people select where to work, we saw this year, this was one of the most scary stats that we saw in our barometer this year, was that 4 out of 10 people see hostile activism as a way to drive change because they're so frustrated that things are not happening properly for them. So that is attached to things that they are seeing where they, even in the workplace, we saw levels of trust in employers. So an employee judging their employer and how trusted they are, that's decreased now. So people are being a lot more skeptical. And attached to that is also how our research shows us that people want to work in organizations that share their values and beliefs. That is a fact based on the research that we've seen. And that's shared around the world. That's not even unique to our market. So that becomes very important, but you can imagine then how that also links to polarization, because if you do join an organization and it's not your values and beliefs and you start to create your own little sort of cohorts, you start to create polarization, which is what we don't want. And we have seen sort of creeping in this grievance, etc. So I think a long way around of saying that it's really important, and it's really important that we do our due diligence in understanding Gen Z, just referring to the earlier point, rather than square peg, round hole, they must adapt to how we are running organizations. I won't tell you what generation I'm from because it'll be giving that away. It's a little higher than Gen Z. But we have to understand what makes them tick, because if we don't address the things that are frustrating them in the workplace, in society, in their relationships, etc., we are going to see potential for hostile activism to start rolling out. Oh, and yeah, that is going to become a big, big problem for us.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating that you're mentioning that. So Bronwyn Williams, the futurist and economist, she was on one of our conversations earlier on this year, where we specifically spoke about this rise of people that don't want to abide to the law anymore because they are so frustrated. I mean, we're seeing the corporate unrest. We are seeing the boycotting that is happening. But something very interesting and fascinating that happened in one of the research projects that we had was we really went deep to say, okay, right, shareholders, who's the shareholders at CNN? Who is the shareholder at BBC and all of the news outlets? What's their agendas, right? Because of who is the shareholder on that? What are they going to defend or not defend? Mm. So where you publish and where you have pieces out or press releases beyond the press release, thought leadership, where you put things matter. Because yeah, now citizens are going, hang on, why are you putting your news or your press releases in this particular news publication because they are far right or far left? Mm. Geopolitics has now entered the playing field. It is now so much more to think about. And to your point in terms of, you know, also this thing of whistleblowing, that we're starting to see that's happening within organizations where it's actually at conferences where people will just stand up and say, this company is not sustainable. What they're putting out there is not true. Don't believe it. So there's a lot of unrest, corporate unrest that is happening. And we need to pay attention to that. And therefore, we also need to become futurist. Mm. We need to start seeing what is in the what is on the horizon so that we can make sure that we cover our bases. And our thought leaders can actually have the confidence to speak out. Because I also feel like people are like, yeah, I don't know if I want to say something in these times. But Larry, I want to bring something to you because I'd be interested to hear your point of view. Mm-hmm. Building trust, a very good tactic, or great strategy, is user-generated content, employee-generated content. Mm-hmm. But now to this point, if we're going to have you know, this activism in place, and we have corporate whistling, hostile activism, and we've got whistleblowing happening, and we have staff or employees that are, for example, not happy within the culture of an organization, but we also have society, consumers not happy out there. Is that necessarily a good strategy to follow? Are you breaking down trust or are you building trust if you do user-generated or employee-generated content?
I mean, it depends. And I feel like that is probably the answer to most communications issues, which is that it depends. Mm. Context tends to determine what intervention you will use. However, the power of user-generated content and employee-generated content, if well deployed, you know, it can really deliver meaningful results. I think the most important thing to know running a business doing communications in this particular cultural environment is that social capital is decentralized. Mm. Consumers, finally, and as a communications practitioner, I'm very proud to say this, that finally consumers, people, communities have power to speak up.
Yeah.
We've come a long way from a time when it was only broadcast, where the big corporate or the big government is the one that only spoke and people listened, and the feedback loop was limited. People have power to speak back. Social media communications has ensured that it's not just one-way comms anymore. It's now a dialogue. And so I think understanding that shift in the way of engagement, I think, is critical. And then the second part of it, and we've heard this over and over again, is authenticity. Mm. But I do like to express it a bit more. And talk about sincerity and honesty. Because really what is most important right now and what resonates right now at a moment where there's a, I love what you said, Karen, when you said it was a pandemic in itself of misinformation. It is critical that organizations, brands, communities, governments, that they embrace sincerity and honesty in their communications, mm. because that's when really people stop and pay attention. When you're sincere, it's not just about what you say, it's about how you behave. When you're honest, it's not just about how you say something, it's about how you show up, how you put your money where your mouth mm. is. And so it is communications essentially not just about how the words are packaged, but how the organization moves through stakeholder landscapes, through cultural landscapes, how it behaves. Like all of those different touch points are part of the big dialogue that we should be looking at. Mm. And so understanding that is a dialogue, I think, is the most important thing. And secondly, being a lot more sincere, a lot more honest in our communications. And that is not just about the press release or beyond the press release. But I think it's also about how an organization behaves, how it carries itself, who it partners with, what it stands for. All of that is part of the communications consideration to building trust.
I love that. That is so beautifully said. And I echo 100, or that word echo chamber. I'm just, my ADHD brain is also now going in the opposite direction, but I echo what you're saying. Honesty and transparency. We're living in a time where it's no longer about the information. It's about the wisdom. And what's the wisdom that's been brought to the table, which comes from a sincere place, an honest place, which is a wonderful segue for me because in the age of AI, you know, it's so easy to quickly just go and pull up a thought leadership piece and circle around. This is kind of the thing like I want to say, help me say this. It doesn't even sound like you. And this thought leadership that is going out, there's actually a beautiful statement that was done by Sandra Mexele. She said that there's a huge difference between thought leadership and thought farming, where thought farming is like agriculture of press releases, articles, and having thought leadership. But I think what we are starting to see from our side is that our information that we put out in the world and our thought leadership should provide people with organizational confidence. It should provide them with intellectual confidence and strategic confidence. That is the value that the content should bring. But if it's not coming from an authentic place and it's all done by AI and it's not even written by the thought leader, that's not honest communication. And that actually has huge implications on trust. What is your view on that, Bridget?
You know that I believe that there's a role for AI. But I think every LinkedIn post is probably written by AI. I do not see much authenticity happening on LinkedIn. But I think that the role of public relations also has a job to do in educating our clients to be that authentic self.
Mm.
You know, we are often tasked with writing content for those LinkedIn thought leadership website, whatever it may be. However, the client needs to be advised, nurtured, cultivated into being that authentic organization
mm.
that adheres to their policies that they publish everywhere, that they talk about their people being key to their organization mm. as their number one resource. Their ethics in dealing with their customers is a priority. But are they actually following through on those principles? And we as the trusted advisors need to be ensuring that our clients are doing that so that we can ensure that that trust comes through, that authenticity mm. in the communication comes through. So there is a responsibility, whilst it is a role of public relations and communicators, I do believe that we need to be enforcing that a lot more within our client advisory, within the suppliers that we deal with, in the relationships that we have with whoever those stakeholders might be, whether it be a journalist, a publishing house, a podcaster, whoever it may be that we're encountering. So I think it is a collective And how do we get everybody to be part of that collective? Mm. How do we get everybody to be part of that ethical, trusted partnership on behalf of a client, on behalf of our own organizations, or on behalf of ourselves?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, I'm just like processing that, because that is such a profound statement. Because, you know, if I look at thought leadership, I also think thought leadership is something that comes to you very slowly. It's something that you research and you percolate over it, and you wonder about this particular subject and you're curious about it. It's not just something you wake up one day that you're a thought leader on. It is something that you have the wisdom and experience on, but there's also this curiosity beyond just the topic. Yes.
And not everyone is a thought leader.
Correct. Yes. Thank you.
Yeah, so that's our brief.
Yeah.
Right. I want to be a thought leader. So yeah. What is your
thought? Right. So I really love the line you said, when you say you nurture client through it. Because the best writing comes from the clearest of thought process. Mm. So if you haven't thought about it, it doesn't matter how articulate or how eloquent you could sound. If there's no depth of thought and there's no clarity of thought, there's no thought leadership.
Mm. Yeah.
So the place of communications as a discipline, again, it's what people see on the printed page is the result of months of nurturing a client and challenging them and putting up a mirror in front of them and saying, no, you cannot say that because you haven't done that. Or have you thought about that? Because that is quite interesting to this community. It is partnering with them to get them to a place where their thoughts are clearer, their thoughts are more aligned to their fundamentals, their philosophies, what they stand for, etc. And to a place where they can lead with how they think about a particular subject matter. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone's a thought leader. Mm. And those that have the potential to be, it does take work to get there.
And this also brings me to this huge thing that we're seeing in the industry, is this whole postbox effect. Mm. It's like, we all think that we are thought leaders.
Yeah.
I've just written a piece. I am so special. Mm. Please, can you? It must be picked up by journalists, and journalists are going, hang on, this is crap. I can't take this.
Yes.
And I'm being very transparent about this. But I think this postbox effect is also that thought leaders need to understand that if you are going to position yourself as a thought leader, you really have to do the work and do it. You roll up the sleeves and have counsel. Mm. Make sure that you're saying the right things. Because in the eventually, when somebody says, I don't agree with you, that you are so grounded that you can say, actually, I hear what you're saying, but here's my facts. Here's why I believe in such and such and such. Mm. Karina, I'm going to ask you a bold question. And let's see.
Bridget's scared for me.
Got you.
Thank you.
My question to you is, we are seeing this trend for many, many years where companies hire journalists of certain publications to write articles and pieces on their behalf. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What is that consequence on trust?
I think it depends, to quote a famous powerhouse in the PR industry. I think it depends. What I can say in our business and how we've incorporated, we have brought in former journalists, and they bring so much more value than just writing for us. Yes, that's their core responsibility and role within the business. However, they are able to understand, they've got a better understanding of what really are people looking for, what resonates, what does a real story look like, what does original thought leadership really when we put it out there. So I have seen huge benefits. I have in previous lives also see where it hasn't necessarily worked, but I think as well being able to think about the broader ecosystem, which is what journalists are able to do. And they're coming from very often sort of an investigative position. Yes. That's how they sort of approach the story, which for us is really effective. And it's the thinking, it's the strategy behind just the output. And that's why I say you will never, AI, will never replace the original thought that somebody has to say, I want to speak about something, to an audience. Yes, AI can facilitate the content of what that thought might be and help you unpack it and say it in the best possible way. But I think really understanding, and it kind of goes back to purpose. And I think another benefit of having, a team of former journalists as well embedded in our business and working with our clients every day is they understand their business. They understand where they can also, what feels authentic and what is important to the leaders that they write on behalf of. And I think that is also important. So that helps to build trust. But I would say that deferring or defaulting to writers as leaders to prepare original thought leadership, which, well, I say original thought leadership is based on having an original thought. And I think thought leadership has become beyond the press release. I think it's a bit of a buzz term. It's like, it's a better version of a press release. So now we would like that for coverage, please. But as you say, Larry, if you're to do it properly and effectively, it takes a while to build that out. And I know I'm running past your question. So, but it for me, that's just an important point to make is that we have an appreciation of that. And I think, as I say, former journalists do bring that aspect. And I think there's also just, there's a lot around ethics in there as well for me.
Yes.
I think as an organization, I was quite surprised to see, in your study, Bridget, that, where did I see there? Only a 6.4 ranking for my the PR industry in my region operates ethically. Only 6.4 points for that in terms of how people agree with that statement. That's quite frightening. That's just a little bit over half. So it implies for me that ethics are not great in our industry, which will have a massive impact on trust. And ethics can show up in many different ways. And I guess to your question around thought leadership specifically, that's exactly it as well. You've also got to operate from a position of ethics and kind of have a clear moral compass when you're preparing content, particularly on behalf of somebody else. So if you're not working in an environment that really promotes that and creates the environment for that, then I think it is difficult because then all you're doing is you're chasing visibility around something. And that's not what I don't think any of us want to have happen to the industry.
And I think it's also very important to your point is we have to be so careful of not writing content to feed the algorithm. Because the algorithm's going to change tomorrow. And that algorithm is changing all the time. The thought leadership needs to be grounded into something of substance. I love the concept of, you know, having a bunch of journalists to almost give a 360 view because they're investigative journalists. However, I'm just being a critical thinker and I always like to embrace duality. But I think if we look at the other side of it, if any of those organizations that they're writing for are compromised, will they have the biases that they would have? Will they be able to do proper investigative journalism should there be an incident that needs to be investigated because they are on their payroll?
I think it's a difficult one because I think you're 100% right. That can absolutely happen. I haven't experienced that, and I think the lines are very clear for us. You know, and we don't even go to the point. I mean, you can imagine former journalists have relationships in newsrooms from their previous experience and previous roles. And we never try and capitalize or leverage on that to be able to score in the editorial urn space. I mean,
that's the unethical part of that.
So I think just having a clear process and a way of working and a very clear role around that should avoid that situation completely. And I haven't. I certainly haven't experienced. I don't know if either of you have. But at all.
No.
And I think what the other point around hiring a former journalist is the fact that they give that perspective on an angle or a thought leader and a story that is not a web page. Because I think so often the clients just want to see their names or their brands or their products within the thought leadership, which is not then the thought leadership article. And I think that to get that across sometimes can be quite difficult.
Whereas
the journalist gives that and they lends that credibility saying, this is what thought leadership actually is. So I think there is real value.
It's wonderful to hear. And it's so necessary because I do think they see a lot more of the world and they are out there. I mean, my husband comes out of a history of journalism. He worked for the top news organizations in the world. It is so important in order to have that view. And I think it's also what I'm getting and what PR and communications is all about is ethics.
On the ethics, it's not my report, by the way. It's the ECHO.
I saw you were commenting on it. So
just to clear that up, factual.
I just wanted to go back on ethics. And one of the, I think, the big concerns across Africa is the payment of editorial. And I think that probably is one of the reasons why ethics sits at a very low figure. I think a lot of clients, organizations expect that everything can go away if you just pay the journalist or if you just pay for that article to appear. And I think that also has an impact on that low figure.
I think you're right.
An elephant in the room.
I think there's something to be said too about our relationship with newsrooms as PR agencies. Whatever comes in the world, the most important thing for any PR practitioner is their relationship to the newsroom.
Yes.
And our ability to, I'm sure a lot of editors might not be happy that we are hiring from within their pools, but I think our ability to tap into journalism graduates and journalism journalists as well to bring them into the fold into the agency space should bode well for our relationships with newsrooms, because then we're not coming through with terrible pitches and advertorial type pitches for editorial content, right? Because now we've got even better insight from somebody who's been in the thick of a newsroom.
Better
content. So I think the value really, when you think about it, is a lot more strategic. It is, how do you shift how an agency thinks about what an editorially credible story is?
The publication should be grateful because they've reduced the size of the newsrooms.
They have.
So we're welcoming those people into our organizations, the journalists, the seasoned journalists.
Yeah.
So we're actually doing a good thing too.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're collaborating. We're working together. Yes.
And we're sharing skills and resources.
Yes.
Exactly. And with AI, I mean, we've seen now there's the rise of GEO, right? There was SEO. Now there's GEO, which is generative engine optimization, which is extremely important for us in the earned space. Where we are feeding the correct information into the system so that when you're generating insights from searches, whether it's through ChatGPT or any other tool, you're actually getting the right information. You're getting credible information. So it's writing with GEO in mind, and really understanding how to use that as a tool, is going to be important as the next phase of how AI is going to start testing us.
When you spoke about search earlier, I was actually thinking about GEO and around how, while we don't write for the algorithm and we don't do content for the algorithm, one ought to be aware of, what the full landscape of discoverability is. And so previously it was the search engine, and then it became search engine and social media, and now it's search engine and social media and generative AI. And as we're thinking about this, it's really fundamental to realize that public relations and public relations practitioners are central in inputting into what generative AI gets to deliver, right? And so that question of ethics becomes incredibly pivotal, right? So if we are putting out spin, generative AI pulls spin, and it doesn't have the same discernment as, and context. And so spews that out and people believe it, et cetera, et cetera. And then we get, you know, misinformation, disinformation. So I think even more important for us to realize how pivotal we are as practitioners in this moment, mm-hmm. because we input into that big machine.
Mm-hmm. Mm. You know, as you're all talking and all the research has come out and, you know, specifically around, you know, artificial intelligence is becoming so prevalent. It's on everybody's lips. Everybody's talking about it, but it's becoming invisible. It's an invisible technology that feeds so many algorithms that brings everything to life. And gosh, maybe next year we're all going to sit here and just do telepathy. I don't know. It's so ever evolving. And to your point, I think that we have to become so good at the DEO, at free behavior, understanding how free behavior works, because it is in that moment of intent where you are sitting in a coffee shop and somebody talks about something and you go, really? Let me go and research that, that question that I'm putting into Google. But now we're also moving into a phase where it's not Google. I mean, one of our research studies, about 40% of the research for B2B companies before they actually transact with them is happening on ChatGPT. And that means there's only one answer provided. It's like if you use voice on command, where's the nice and the best cheeseburger in town? I'm only going to get one result. And who's going to be on top? And so the work in PR and communications goes far beyond that. And there's also, you know, the buyer's journeys of you and the buyer's journeys of your clients and the buyer's journeys of your clients' clients, and taking all of that in consideration and how that GEO is fitting into that free behavior across the journeys. Because ultimately, you want to be discovered on every platform.
Mm.
Because as you said, those days of just throwing money at advertising are gone. People don't have money for that. And if you have to throw a lot of money in any way to advertising and your content can't work on GEO, there's a problem and it needs to be fixed.
You know, I hear you. And I think fundamentally, I agree. I think in reality, though, a lot of African markets tend to be a bit different.
Mm.
So earned is quite straightforward and easy for us here in South Africa because we have a different landscape. But for instance, I was in Nairobi just last week and catching up with my team there. And what came up quite a bit is because of the struggles within the media space, newsrooms are more amenable to paid now than they are to earned within, you know, in that market to survive, essentially, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we think about our earned strategies, I think the shift needs to happen in the way we talk to our clients about the realities of landing coverage and finding them prime coverage in media, because they have to think about budget. And so a shift that we've done is to think about earned as earned attention, not just earned coverage. And so the work we do should earn the attention of stakeholders, earn the attention of newsrooms too. And in instances where newsrooms cannot afford to just post it without any investment in it, what we need to think about is a better, stronger, more robust partnership with that newsroom. The ethics, however, of the truth in that content, the authenticity, still sit with us. You know, because it's paid for doesn't mean that you can go and put a crappy article up there with like 17 mentions of your client within the first paragraph, because also the consumer's not going to read it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's just, I think being able to play with those honest dynamics on the ground, and for us to evolve how we engage our clients when it comes to putting these kinds of interventions together.
Absolutely love it. So now I want to talk Africa, right?
Yeah.
Let's talk Africa.
You're the queen of segues.
Hey! We're going into Segway Africa. You know, I remember, now you're going to laugh. I was doing training on custom experiences in Mauritius. And I finished my training and I decided I am going to have a glass of wine. And they had these like mattresses, which you sit on. Like you don't sit on a chair. It was beautiful. And you look over the ocean. And I open up and there's the Ndlovu choir in their finals, and I start bawling. I'm crying. I'm so proud of my country and of our people. And, you know, I was so proud in that moment seeing the African culture, and us and the world stage seeing the beautiful rhythm of Africa. And, since then, I've started noticing a lot, like during the pandemic, it was the Jerusalem and everybody was doing that worldwide. We have Tyler, we have the choirs everywhere popping up. We have, our thought leaders, everybody, there is a lot happening. What is it that PR and communications do differently in Africa? What is there a different way of storytelling? What is making PR specifically in Africa more prominent? I'm going to start with you, Bridget.
So I think that for me, the African PR environment is really a hands-on environment. It's very relationship-driven. Mm. Mm. I think they have a lot of technology issues and challenges from a connectivity point of view. And I think that relationships are very, very important. They cannot just sit behind a computer and make things happen. They have to have the one-on-ones. Mm. They have to be meeting with people. They have to be sitting in rooms and having conversations. And I think that if there is a fundamental difference, it would be the one-on-one relationships that PR people need to have with their different stakeholders. And I think the second challenge is they live with not being taken seriously. I think Africa, if you, from a global perspective, sure. and we see Africa becoming more important on the global stage, people are recognizing that Africa is a growth market for them. And they think that to go into Africa and to implement a strategy and roll out a PR program, thought leadership or otherwise,
local,
it's cheap. Because it's Africa.
Oh, yeah.
And how wrong they actually
how
are.
How wrong they are.
And if you compare an American or a US or a Europe rate with Africa, they go, but why are you so expensive? Well, look at your rates versus Africa. We still need to get to a higher rate of acceptance amongst those global companies.
Oh, sure.
And that for me is one of the biggest challenges, because you cannot expect Africa to operate on a shoestring.
Yeah.
Yet you're spending millions of dollars on your global markets. Yes, it might be a small market for you, but you still have to spend the right money and get the right people to do the right job effectively in Africa.
Mm. And also have the foresight. This continent, keep an eye, because there's big things percolating.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be, everybody's going to want to know what's happening in Africa. And we're starting to see that. I mean, it's such an exciting time for us. I mean, we are going to become the grand masters. We are taking our place, I hope. Like, I am trying to be very optimistic here, but we also have to always embrace duality, right? I can see Larry's going, listen, too much optimism over here, take it a notch down.
Hope is not a strategy. But I'm with you. I'm with you.
Karina, what is your view on this?
Yeah, absolutely agree with what Bridget said. I think to add to that is, we probably will find that if we think about how agencies are set up outside of South Africa across the continent, a lot of them do much more than PR. Mm-hmm. And they have already been tapping into doing some marketing, doing production, doing many kinds of services in the sort of marketing communication space, where I think largely in South Africa, the trend is to be much more sort of specialized in PR and communications, unless you're part of a much bigger sort of integrated group. So I actually wonder if those agencies will then have the best opportunity to sort of leapfrog into much more dynamic content generation and the understanding of how to pull more things together than just being sort of highly specialized. Because that's just how they've set themselves up, just because of the size of the markets and the availability of the skills. So I'm going to be excited to see how that actually starts to change things in the digital sort of influencer marketing space. I think we're quite far along in South Africa. I think there's other parts of the continent that are doing influencer marketing much better than we are.
And for longer.
Yeah.
And you know what's fascinating is because in most African countries, they are not paid to create content like in other countries. So they are more authentic and bring the true heart and the rhythm of the continent to life. Mm. It's not like trying to do something because of the algorithm. So, you know, that's something I appreciate. It maybe served us well in the long run. Larry.
African CEOs, or rather CEOs of PR agencies in Africa are billable. Like, we work. When Bridget says we're hands-on, when Karina says we're hands-on, it is the truth. Because we are in the thick of things doing the work with our teams. And it's because work on the continent requires that hands-on approach. Mm. I really like the dynamism of the landscape outside of South Africa, the fact that agencies do so much more, because the consumer does not look at a piece of comms in media and delineate what discipline that is. Oh, now I'm being served a thought leadership piece. That must be from a PR agency. So let me put on my, you know, consumers want content that's interesting.
Yeah.
Content that's engaging, that speaks to where they are, that meets them where they are. And that's when you start to be discipline agnostic and focus on the integrity of a story, the strength of your pitch, the honesty and sincerity of your engagement. And that has nothing to do with PR or direct marketing or advertising agencies. And I think South Africa is going to learn that the hard way, because budgets continue to shrink every year, even when we still believe that, you know, we're out of COVID, things are going to normalize. The normal is integrated communications is the way to go. Mm. And public relations needs to pivot to a place where we're discipline agnostic. All we care about is the integrity of the content and how that connects our clients' businesses with communities in a meaningful way. So I think we'll learn that as South Africa from the rest of the continent. Maybe the hard way, but I think we will. I'm also really interested in seeing the continued evolution of the influence landscape.
Mm.
Because of the decentralization of communications and society in general, in terms of our ability to publish content and engage as consumers and as human beings, I think it really empowered consumers and communities to participate and to engage and to create content and to be active citizens and to be active communities. But what it also unlocked was these really culturally relevant ways of communicating and culturally relevant ways of connecting, you know? If we think about where storytelling is going, it's not dictated by agencies anymore. It's dictated by influencers.
Mm-hmm.
It's dictated by what TikTok calls creators. I would just call them people, like the regular degular. My grandmother is an 88-year-old woman. She is the funniest person I have ever met. And
I can see the alignment, yeah?
She will hold court. And the way she choreographs words is just so fascinating. And you see that and you think, wow, the power of media could catapult that into a really interesting place. I saw a couple of, I think a year ago, 2 years ago, an old gogo from Zambia, I think, who's got a niece from the US who was styling her and putting her in these really beautiful, elaborate costumes. And you think, well, this is just a grandmother in the rural areas just minding her own business. And you think about the credibility and of that content because of its authenticity, of its sincerity and honesty. And I think that's probably Africa's gift to the world, you know? Steve Biko said that one of the things that Africa will take to the world is Ubuntu. I am because you are, you are because I am. And I think a lot of that is showing up in authentic communications, you know. We are storytellers at heart. Across the continent, we speak over 2,000 languages. many other continents can't say that. Not leading with your chest like we can. There's a lot of diversity in our cultures. There's a lot of resilience in our communities, and not because we have a choice, but because we love life and we want to live. And so, I'm excited for the world to finally find out
about
what
time
we show up with.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm very excited. I'm in for that ride. So, before we get to a little game I've prepared for us, I want us to just go around the room and talk about...
We don't play games. What?
Listen, with
we don't
me,
do rapid fire.
Anything is possible. Don't worry, it won't be too crazy. What I want to ask, if we can go around the room, is a mandate for your industry, for future thought leaders, for the current thought leaders, for journalists. What is the mandate of what you want to see and the changes you want to see for PR going forward? Bridget.
I believe that we have a very important role to play as PR professionals in driving the narrative for Africa. We've done good things for our clients in building their brands, building their reputation across Africa. And I think that this is just the beginning because of the increased interest in Africa from the global stage. I think that we have a greater role to play in driving that interest, driving the narrative for Africa. And that, I believe, is the role that public relations has to play going forward.
Love that. Well said. This is our goat.
The goat.
Yay. The OG. Bridget.
Karina.
We all learn so much, and you still come with the real way of, you know, like I want to offer you a compliment. You are one of the very few people that I know that almost respond on the day. Like, you're a person that is always polite and you take communications very seriously. Like, I think I've never sent you an email that's taken you perhaps sometimes 48 hours at the most. You know,
48 hours?
No, sometimes. Wow. Not all the time. But on WhatsApp,
was it a weekend?
On anywhere.
What is a weekend?
I think it's such a beautiful quality because I feel that is something that has been lost over time. Like, people just don't communicate with each other properly. And you, like, are for me, like, such an inspiration with that. I always look at it and go, wow, people can learn a lot about that. I just wanted to say that.
Well, I think it's simply rude if you don't respond quite well. And if we're talking about always on, and if we're talking about being responsive to our stakeholders, then actually we should be responding.
Yeah.
And I don't put you in an importance rating. You know, I don't say, okay, later. I try to respond to everybody at least within the same day.
Yeah.
That people.
You're really amazing with that. Really amazing. So, yeah. What is your mandate?
It's got to be linked to trust, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what else would my mandate be for everybody? I think it's, you know, let's deal in the truth. I think it's just, we are living in very uncertain, volatile times. Mm. And I think it's really important that we keep our eyes on, you know, what is the right thing to do. And we use that as our guide in how we manage ourselves, manage our business, manage our relationships with stakeholders, etc., and do the same for our clients when we have that, and encourage them to do that. We've seen in our trust barometer how business is the most trusted institution. There's a lot of responsibility on business to step up and step in and start taking action on things that matter to people. And we are all in businesses ourselves. So this isn't just a mandate for our clients who are businesses. Even for ourselves, we have to start thinking about how do we start to be part of the change that needs to happen and the action that needs to be taken to achieve that level of change. Mm. So, yeah.
Sure. Larry.
I love that deal in trust. It's really powerful. Two things. I think first, what does it look like to strengthen the relationship between the communications lead in a business and the CEO?
Yeah.
Especially in this moment where I guess the challenges in the world have made it so business have an opportunity to make a meaningful difference. And the onus is on us, the practitioners, to strengthen and fortify that communications team within our clients' businesses so they walk into the boardroom and engage with other execs confidently. Every CEO should care about the story that is told about their business, but they only care about it if the chief communications officer makes it their business. So how can we strengthen that relationship between the chief communications officer or corporate affairs exec or head of communications with the CEO? I think that's the first thing. Then the second part of my mandate is for us, which is meaningful creativity.
Hmm.
I think because of a lot of the noise in the industry and because there are so many players in the industry, there's a lot of creativity for the sake of the algorithm or, you know, for the sake of the moment. And there's still a lot more room for creativity that is meaningful.
Yeah.
So meaningful to a business's bottom line, meaningful to, you know, the profits of our clients, but equally meaningful to the communities within which we work and exist. Mm. Ethical, human-centered, creativity that changes minds in a world where we are dealing with narrative versus fact. The creativity we show up with and deploy to address our client issues should be meaningful to these communities beyond just the bottom line of our clients' businesses. So those two things.
Well, that is quite a mandate. We should like create a something to hang up on our office walls at the reception.
We'll come back in charter. 6 months' time for a review of our
yes, actually, for a review. Yes. A review exactly.
Scorecard.
Yeah.
You know, as you all were talking, I was reminded of I spoke at a conference once in Indonesia, and one of the speakers said something so profound that never left me. He said, "It's old things in a new way or new things in an old way. Otherwise, it's just an observation." And we have to go back to the old ways of the roots of being African, our Ubuntu, who we are, the ethics, humanity. It's not just about the artificial world, guys. It is about humanity. But at the same time is how do we bring AI humanity into our industries and into the world that we live in and, you know, make it more meaningful from creativity all the way to communication, all the way to thought leadership. It's so important. So I got us something. I got us wine gums. Okay, big boss, because I've got three CEOs sitting here with me that really got me going in the beginning. Like I was trying to do my intro, but I just have to do it just now and then I'll replay it for you. I don't know if you're going to hear this or not. Oh, it was tense. Anyway, so I'm getting them back now. So here's wine gums and I know that you have a lot to whine about too.
What?
It's, you know, like let's take three wine gums out each and then each wine gum must represent something that you want to whine about. It could be in the industry, things that really are pet peeves for you.
Three.
And then just pass it on. And then as you pass it on, go, you can start.
I'm very curious. I'm very curious to know what Larry's going to have to say over here. It's going to maybe be pointed directly to me.
I have nothing to whine about. Everything's fantastic.
Oh, wow.
That's the PR answer.
Right? I promise no spin.
And you can put that on LinkedIn.
Get AI to write it well, yes, for me, won't I?
Shall I record?
It's already written.
Can we pass it back?
I mean, we'll only play this game if you wine with us.
Yes. Okay, I will. Right? I will. Okay, yes. All right.
So do we do one wine at a time?
Wine at a time.
Okay.
Sorry, it's not real wine.
Hey, it's a podcast. I feel like we could have done with real wine,
yeah,
of the effervescent type.
Oh my gosh, with you it's perfectly
yeah, I suppose so.
Right. My first wine is we have a case as an industry. We have a case. You know what? I'm going to look at the camera and I'm going to do my Christian Amanpour impression as an industry. My first wine is to the industry. We have a serious case of the cobbler's shoes. Our own reputation is so bad, and we don't do enough work to elevate our own positioning. And so businesses generally end up not truly understanding what it is that we do and the value we bring. Mm. But we also don't do enough of celebrating our own successes.
Sure.
I think for a very long time, because we are, you know, the smaller end of marketing and comms budgets, we are just focused on just scrambling for whatever we can get out of that table. But we know the inherent value of our work to a business's bottom line. And I think we need to do a lot more of shouting from the rooftops around the meaningful work that we do and how it shifts companies and societies.
Mm.
In South Africa, we only have one major PR awards property. Everything else is advertising with PR as a category to it, you know.
Mm. Well, I did do that. I added a bit of extra in.
I was coming to you.
No. I've got my own wine. Don't worry about
it. Well, you wanted about
precious. No. I did want to give props to the goat, which is, you know, I don't know that the PR Institute of South Africa would have carried the prisms for as long as they have without your custodianship. And it's just the one. It's the one.
Mm.
And it happens once a year, and then everybody forgets about it until the next time we open up again. And to your defense, many years you've tried to rally agencies, you've tried to rally practitioners to participate more, to do more. And I think we could do more as an industry.
Mm.
We absolutely could. We are the ones that make our clients look amazing. Why can't we make ourselves look amazing? So that's my wine.
Love it.
And so I'd like to challenge you
on your wine.
She says pensively.
There are a lot of agencies that don't participate in the Prism Awards.
Yes.
And I think they may have legitimate reasons, but I think that if the industry is going to show up and show off their best, then it should be everybody that That's participates.
Mm.
Because I cannot benchmark what I'm doing if you don't participate or if you don't participate.
Right.
Because you need to have a benchmark of leading agencies.
Mm.
Yeah.
I don't want to be benchmarked against people that are not regarded as some of the best.
That's true.
So my challenge is, when the Prism Awards comes up, please participate.
I always do.
Thank you so much.
And how I will
I
take the challenge.
Do.
Yes,
you
we
hear,
do.
You
we
hear
do.
It on camera
and the rest.
But what perhaps, and I'm throwing Karina into this boat with
Uh-oh.
Me. And I'm actually throwing Inzalo into
this. We're having
boat
a proper wine
too.
Session.
No, we're in the boat now.
Which is.
Bring that wine.
Perhaps we could do more to encourage our colleagues to participate.
Mm. Mm.
because it's all we got. Mm. From the way it is organized to the way we roadshow the awards after winning them to our clients to the way we position the awards, yeah. Perhaps we should do a lot better as individual agencies, but also as an industry.
Sure,
that's fair. As a collective.
Yeah. Yeah, mm.
Yeah. Love that. Love that.
I think that I would like to, and it's probably been a long lifetime hobby horse of mine, is to try and elevate the public relations environment within corporates. I think that very often, only when it comes to a crisis or a reputation matter, public relations people are called in to deal with the reputation matter. And yes, then we deal at the C-suite. But we renegated, and I don't mean it in a rude way, a lot to the comms department mm-hmm. or the marketing department. And I do believe that the role of reputation sits right at the top. Mm. And whether you're launching a brand or creating thought leadership for your management or your specialists within an environment, it needs to be at boardroom level. Mm-hmm. We need to be at that C-suite.
100%.
Yeah, here.
So agree.
And that is one of my pet hobby horses is to, but it also is the quality of PR person that needs to be in at the C-suite. And very often, maybe within a corporate environment, they will take their own internal comms person higher up the ranks. But very often, they're waiting for a response. They don't have that opportunity. Dear boss, CEO, we've got to respond. We've got an opportunity. This is what our strategy is. How does it fit into the business strategy? How can we grow your business imperatives? How can we reach your 5-year target faster by including the communications team and your external advisory team into your plans?
Yeah.
And it's missing.
Yeah. Sure. Well said.
Agreed.
Yeah.
That's one.
Go to.
Mine has got to be AVE. I know it's not as profound as the two issues that you've raised, but we just can't kill it. And I think we have to start to move, you know, and the irony is that our clients are expecting better measurement and evaluation from us, but they still pull us back to AVE. Not all of them. But I think we've got to get to a point where we start thinking differently. It can absolutely be one metric within the bigger measurement and evaluation dashboard and process that we have. But at some point we've got to move away from column centimeters equals value for the business. You know, what I would have spent to advertise in the space is what the value is. I think you said it earlier, Larry, is around what change did we create? What did we shift with the work that we did?
Yeah.
You can't measure that in how much the column centimeters would have cost me to pay for that.
And how many placements of that one article.
Exactly.
Yeah. Syndicated content. Yeah.
And also if it's evergreen content, right?
Thought that leadership content might be 2 years.
A boom. I mean, like, just to give you an example, some of the podcasts that we have done 2 or 3 years ago would be one of our top performing podcasts without advertising it, without talking about it 2 or 3 years later. And I think not enough credit is being given to the content that is, especially if you write with that intent to have it live longer. You can't just measure it in the month it's gone out.
Mm. Yeah, I think there's I mean, put that on a billboard. We will help pay for it. Like, there's a lot of qualitative value that we bring because we are cultural institutions inherently.
Mm.
And so the 6 inches of column space that we got is not the full picture of our value. Mm. I love that.
But it is about getting clients to think differently because at the end of the day, the finance department want to see you spending so much money on PR and tell me what the return on investment is.
Yeah.
And they only are equating it against the column centimeters.
Yeah.
But why are you not putting those measurable objectives and up front with figures to it? And that's why I introduced it into the Prism Awards, that AVE is not...
It's not a measure.
It's not a measure.
Yeah.
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 And the AMIC at least have a good idea of how companies can actually measure their PR, mm-hmm. but clients will still turn around and say, but how many? How much?
Mm. Yeah.
What because it again, it's too, but it's all connected, right? Because they are getting pressure and they're not at the right tables to have the conversation to explain why this is not a, mm-hmm. a fully valuable metric in and of itself mm-hmm. for the work that actually is being done. And so it's constant push and pull on coming down from often senior leadership. The expectations on the comms team to deliver something through their agency is based on very outdated metrics. How can the rest of the world have moved on? After, you know, so many decades, I won't say how many, where I was literally doing ROI. Remember we did the colon. We did for R1, you got this many rands. Mm. I mean, that was years ago. And how can everything else have moved on so far? But that hasn't. Like, yeah. We just have to think differently about it and take our clients on the journey with us. I mean, let's do it together and figure it out.
Do you remember PR value with a multiplier?
Yes. Times three
to the AVE.
Actually, if it was on the front page, it was times eight.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's a good one. I could have done so much better in my career.
Oh, my. I think a pet peeve for me is briefs. I good feel
one. What carving clients?
Well said. Oh, I love that. That's very witty. I can just imagine what you're like in a boardroom meeting. Oh my gosh. Off the ceiling. These lights would be perfect for you. But you know, I think one of my pet peeves is this whole concept around the briefs that comes to us mm-hmm. in our industry. Garbage in, garbage out. And what is also interesting enough is the more questions you ask, the less answers you get. Mm. And as we are moving towards an age of sustainability, we need to understand what is the life of end of product. We need to understand, you know, how things are happening within the supply chain. Our understanding needs to be far more wider because we are taking something to the forefront. You know, we have the soapboxes and we have to take them. And that's where trust is broken, is from that brief and the understanding of the entire ecosystem within the organization. I feel like that mystery days needs to stop. Everybody needs to come to the table and we need to get proper briefs. And if the brief is not proper, we need to start challenging those briefs.
Mm. Good one.
Yeah. I think the briefs also need to stop saying, write me a press release and they, or write me a thought leadership piece. And they need to start saying, my business has this problem.
100%. Yes.
That's a different brief because then you're coming to me saying, find a solve, whatever communication solve you will find, find it.
Mm.
If you think it's a thought leadership piece, that's fine. Or if you think it's a stakeholder meeting, that's fine. But my business has this problem. How can I solve it?
Mm.
And again, I think there's on one end, I think we need to capacitate our partners, our client partners to engage internally so that when those briefs are being developed by their teams before they get to us, that they're also just well articulated.
Mm.
The briefs need to stop being prescriptive. They need to start being a lot more open-ended because that's where creativity is.
We need to start in a time where we have answers for everything because we can have answers at our fingertip. We need to start asking better questions. And that has to come within the whole cycle, within the whole ecosystem.
Mm.
Bridget, what's your second wine?
I think would be pitching would probably be my next one. And I think that we put a lot of effort, time, and creativity into putting pitch decks together and pitch proposals together for clients. And one of multitude of decisions could happen here or could not happen here. Firstly, you never hear back from them or the pitch is cancelled or you don't get feedback or their expectation is so high. And I think that mostly it's about a partnership with the client. How does that chemistry actually work between the client and the agency or the practitioner. And I think that pitch document, I don't know how many pitch documents actually are implemented. I'm sure that that percentage is tiny of how many pitch documents we put together. And the client says, you're the winning agency. Go and implement your campaign.
Seldom.
Doesn't happen. What a waste. What a waste of talent, skills, expertise, money, time, and I can carry on.
Yeah.
So I would see, like to see a lot more collaborative partnerships happening when it comes to a pitch process. And don't ask 20 agencies to pitch. Be selective. Do your own homework, even if you use ChatGPT.
Yeah. 100% love.
I guess a little bit attached to what's been mentioned already, but also this idea of value of time. Why are we so apologetic in our industry about charging clients for our time? And I often feel there's a pushback to say, well, you know, that should be a value add, or that should just be in your hours, you know, just make your kind of retainers work. We're a professional services industry, effectively, those of us who, you know, service clients. And if you work with a lawyer or you work with a consultant and a PwC, they charge per hour. It's the value of their time per second. That's the value of their time, their IP, their knowledge, their expertise, everything. And they don't apologize for that. And they're able to charge what they feel is the value of what they're providing. Yes, it's absolutely our responsibility to make sure we deliver that value. So there is a duality there. But I think just the value, you mentioned it earlier, it's just the tiny little budgets that we get, a lot spent on advertising marketing. We should be adopting the posture of advertising agencies, that confidence that they bring, because PR is often leading the ideas now. And we know that PR has changed significantly, and with digital in the mix, it's just a completely different playing field. So I think just we also just need, I mean, maybe I'm speaking just for myself, Aranda, but it feels like we're apologetic, but please, this is going to cost a bit more. And then it's a big deal. Whereas in other companies, there's no apology. This is the value we can bring, and it's up to you. So yeah, so that's me.
This one is directed at us too. These kids don't read anymore. Read books.
Or the news.
Read books. You don't know how many times I've spoken to a lot of junior associates and junior practitioners who do not read books. They read tweets. They read captions.
And TikTok.
And TikToks. But they don't read books. It is mind-blowing how people expect to improve their vocabulary and their diction if they have not read a long-form piece of content like an essay or a book. And they don't all have to be nonfiction. My goodness. Read fiction. Read Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. She is fantastic. She will improve your language. Read James Baldwin and Toni Morrison and Zakes Mda. We've got so many amazing writers. Read books. Young people who are entering PR, you cannot be a writer if you do not read. It's really that simple. You can't write if you don't read. You can't think clearly if you have not experienced the thoughts of other creative people and how clear they become on paper.
Sure.
Read books. Read long-form journalism. Read essays. Read books, please. That's my wine.
It's a good one.
Mic drop. I mean, I'm just going to comment before I give my wine. But I saw, I was watching a long form piece of content that was talking about the harm that these short form videos and short form content is having on people is because they can't, first of all, can't retain the information, but you can't take a complex topic and put it into 2 minute videos. That's where misinformation happens. And I was like, wow. We really, you know, like this conversation would not have made sense in a 2 minute video. Exactly for the same reasons. I think my second wine is, multidisciplinary thinking.
I also think that multidisciplinary thinking is something we all can learn from. It's like philosophy, to your point. It's like it's looking at philosophy, history, economics, understanding how Bitcoin is created, like having curiosity that is almost an obsession, because if you have curiosity, you can build your own creative algorithm. And what I am seeing in every industry is that the creative algorithm is now being outsourced to AI, and that's not creativity. Creativity is something that's slow. It's thinking, it's processing, and it's really taking in the richness of culture, and letting it process with your emotions, because emotions is energy, and that is what makes humanity amazing and what makes our creativity amazing.
Nice. Good.
Nice. Very nice.
Now I think you've got another wine now.
I do. We could be here all day.
Yes. You told us to think of three, so I've got my third one.
Yeah. My third one, I think, is more for the boardroom. I hope I am alive at a time in the world where all the other disciplines at the boardroom don't think they know communications. Where they all keep quiet and they let the corporate affairs executive take them through storytelling, and they accept it in the same way they would when a CFO presents their numbers or when a legal expert presents their legal expertise. We are a, for all intents and purposes, a technical discipline like any other. And yet at boardrooms, everyone has an opinion about how to do PR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it needs to change. It needs to change, because to harness the skill and this experience takes time, and it takes reading, it takes scholarship, it takes a lot of work. We're talking about Bridget being the goat. You don't get here simply because you just saw a few TikToks. And I think some of the work we need to do to get there is probably the work we need to do as an industry to position ourselves. But we are a technical discipline. And we ought to be treated as such at the boardroom table.
Yeah,
I think a very valuable point, and I think we need to take the podcast and make sure we send it out to clients and because maybe we're not landing that message ourselves. So.
The thing you've been trying to say for the last X amount of years.
Yes. So.
Yeah.
So I think that my third of many, but my third gripe would be around collaboration. And I'm talking about collaboration generally. I think we speak about clients as partners. We speak about colleagues. We speak about journalists. We have a whole network of people that make up a whole. And I think that very little collaboration happens amongst us. And I think that so much can be learned from one another. So much can be shared with one another. I think since I am the goat.
How many times can we say goat?
I'm enjoying it.
Take a tequila shot for every time it's
the goat. No, but a special clip.
One of the things that I have tried to work on, and hence the start of the Prism Awards, was to get people to collaborate, to talk to one another, to actually share experiences, to actually learn from one another. And I think that we don't do enough of that. There seems to be that competitive, why would I talk to her about it? Why would I talk to him about it? You know, if we have a client that you used to work on, find out from you what it is that we should know about that particular client. If there's somebody that worked for you and has come for a job interview with us, find out how that person performed. Find out what's impacting you as a CEO of a global organization. What is impacting you? What are your difficulties that you're having in Africa? What are the challenges that we're all facing? And how can we, as a collaborative, assist one another in those different challenges? And I don't think we're doing enough of that.
Yeah.
Sure.
And before I get on to my last one, just to give you that prop as well, like, you are so uplifting and supportive, and there's no sense from you that we're competitors.
Yeah.
Mm.
Ever when we're having a conversation. You know, there's trust, there's mutual trust, and there's mutual respect. Mm. And I think that is something you're 100% right. We've got to cultivate that across our industry. Yeah. So that, because I think if we share, we'll be better overall. Mm. And to your point, we can uplift the entire industry with that instead of being in our silos. So you do an incredible job like that.
But there's another aspect to it, is that how often will you be pitching? And you say to the client, the potential client, who else is pitching? Or how many agents? Can't tell you that.
Can't tell you.
Mm. And you must walk in this door and walk out that door because there's something. And I think, you think I don't know Larry? You think I don't know Karina? I mean, how silly. Yeah. And do you think I'm not going to pick up the phone and say, Karina, are you pitching on this particular?
I wouldn't tell you anyway. So last one for me, I think, and given that I'm the last one, I don't want to make this negative at all. So let's try and be uplifting. But I think just to say, I've been just thinking about people for a second and our people. I've been on the client side and I've been on the agency side. And I'd love for, let's pick up on the collaboration idea, better collaboration from particularly clients and our teams. And I think we are going to see the dynamic between client and agency change rapidly in the coming years with AI. It's going to completely change how we work with each other. Who does what do they need us for? What do we need them for? And I just think there is, again, that sort of mutual respect is so critical. And I could see, having been on the client side myself, how I got such great results when I worked in the best possible respectful way with my agency. And I think it's difficult for those in corporate environments as well. They're under a lot of pressure. They've got a lot of internal stakeholders, but we're there to partner. We're there to help you achieve your goals. Mm. And if we work like that with the same goal in mind, then I think we're going to achieve amazing things together.
Yeah. My last one, I'll keep it simple. I just wish, to the point on collaboration, is there are so many of us out there that are so creative, that can bring creativity. I've had the opportunity to work with Bridget and her team closely, and, is just give people a chance. Like, it's so difficult to get freaking meetings with people, or people that are answering emails. Like, yes, see, I'm not AI. I am a real human being. And I feel like the effort that it takes to actually build relationships with people has become so, so difficult. And I just want, our industry to find ways of how we can embrace our authenticity more by building better connections with each other, so that we, can take things to the market that are crazy creative, especially as Africans, because we have a huge role to set an example for the rest of the world. This is really what I believe.
Mm.
But I mean, this has been an incredible conversation. I absolutely loved it. If board meetings are like this with so much laughter, I'm like, okay. But listen, it was really so much fun. I just want to say thank you to each one of you, and to our audience. So thank you very much for sticking around, and I hope that you've taken notes. I would even recommend that you take the transcript of this conversation, run it through AI, pull out all the themes, and go and research it. This has been a phenomenal conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Carmen. Respect you all.
Thanks, Larry.